Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and our panel for this Tuesday, the 23rd of December. Very nice to have you with us and a delight to have a conversation. We have a terrific panel assembled before us. If you enjoyed yesterday's panel, it's the same one.
So we're back.
They're back. And if you weren't with us, don't worry, I'll introduce them to you. I just have to think, you know, I was just walking in from the car to here, and it's a cold driving horrible rain, and you can't help but think that if this were the weather in the North Pole, which because of global warming, it may well be.
Won't be long.
That Santa would sort of just go out and go, maybe tomorrow.
This is the kind of day you stay in by the fire.
Right. Yeah, just like, screw it. I'll do it.
Yeah, but another 10 degrees cooler and I probably wouldn't be here, you know?
Well, that's true, too. Well, it's very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you. Joining us for the discussion, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is here. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning.
College of St. Rose Communications Professor Mary Alice Mulgard joining the fray. Good morning.
Good morning.
And our political consultant extraordinaire.
Okay.
The one who knows all.
Thank you very much.
Libby Post. Good morning.
Good morning, darling.
Very nice to have you with us. So, a lot to talk about. I threw out just a lot of topics today because I thought we could get to a lot of good stuff. And we welcome your letters. Roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. And we'll begin with the aftermath of the murder in New York City over the weekend of two New York City police officers. And yesterday we saw the mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio, say that he was calling for calm. He was calling for the suspension of protests until after the burial of the two officers. We saw the governor of the state also call for calm and an enjoying and an understanding of the holidays. There is a editorial in the New York Times this morning that is about Mr. de Blasio's call for harmony, saying to put aside protests and bitter words at least until the funerals are done was an understandable bid for civic calm. Fair enough. Anything that even briefly silences the police union leader Patrick Lynch, whose response to the killings has been to slander Mr. de Blasio as a bloody-handed accomplice to murder, is worth supporting. But the moment for discussion and argument will soon return, and that moment will demand forceful truth-telling to counter the lies and distrust that have clouded this tragedy. So, yes, we have that moment. I think we talked about this yesterday, of just having that moment to sort of process the horror of the event. And then we can, not that it has to be finger pointing, but at least we can have a discussion as to what happened. How do you characterize, Mike? What do you think of what's going on with the mayor, who we should say was really largely silent yesterday?
Yeah, he had, and there was a press conference where I thought it certainly was an appropriate call for calm and to sort of push the pause button, I think is how he phrased it, on the back and forth that's been going on and the finger pointing and the kind of harsh language that has been exchanged primarily from the police officers union towards the mayor. But the he did also criticize the news media and had an exchange with a reporter where he chastised the media for focusing on what he regarded as a tiny fraction of problems with the protesters, and that the vast majority of the protests of Eric Garner's, the way Eric Garner's death was followed up, and there was no indictment of the police officer and bringing in, of course, the St. Louis and the Missouri case. He said that, you know, they focused on the most inflammatory aspects of it, which really did not represent it, and kind of got into a back and forth with a reporter. But, you know, I think what it reveals is how human everybody is and how sensitive everybody has become during a very, very emotional experience. It is a painful, painful time. And I think it was correct for him to say this was pain and an attack on all of New York. Police officers, citizens, people of all color and diversity, and it is an enormously diverse city. And that was a good tone.
I'm struck. Go ahead, Libby.
Well, I just think the Mr. Lynch's hyperbole is just throwing gasoline on a fire to make the folks who were demonstrating more angry at the police. So it feeds into his, we need more police, and, you know, well, we're working without a contract. I mean, he's politicizing this in a way that really isn't good for anybody. And I think what the mayor did yesterday is the only course of action you can have in this kind of situation. As Mike said, everybody is hurting. And to just politicize this in the way that Lynch is doing, I think does a disservice to the police as well as to everyone else. And the other part of this is that, you know, Lynch is trying to draw a line between the demonstrators, the guy who killed the cops, and this whole incident. And this guy was not part of that. You know, he's using rhetoric, but he wasn't part of it. There's been no real call, as some of the folks in the police department are saying. You know, they want to kill all the cops. This happens. You know, and you become a police officer, you become a firefighter. You know, you're putting your life on the line. This happens. It's a horrible tragedy. We shouldn't be politicizing this for anybody's benefit.
I want to just read a paragraph from the Times editorial this morning. Mr. Bratton had chosen his words poorly earlier in the day in a morning TV interview, saying that, quote, the targeting of these two police officers was a direct spinoff of this issue of these demonstrations. The Times points out he should have made clear that the only one responsible for the killings is the killer. Mr. Bratton's 35,000 officers, in whom Mr. Lynch has been trying mightily to stoke a sense of grievance and victimhood, need to hear from him that this administration fully supports the police and the gestures of contempt by turning their backs on the mayor are out of place. I'm surprised that has gotten as far as it has.
Well, you know, the event happened. Then you cover what happened after the event. And turning your back on the highest elected official in the city who you are sworn to serve, you know, is a great image.
And well, it's a great image, but at what point does the first person do it that somebody doesn't come back and go, don't do that?
Well, that's the problem. Nobody is saying...
Well, yeah, no one said that to Lynch is to back off. And there's also the underlying issue here that hasn't really been talked a lot about throughout the coverage of the story, is that there are contract negotiations going on as well. And some people are interpreting Lynch's actions as just stoking that fire that has absolutely nothing to do with the shootings. So, you know, we have to look at his actions in that light as well.
Well, ordinarily, the combative negotiations for New York City police contracts would be local news.
Right.
It wouldn't make national news. This is made international news by the events. And there was a good interview earlier this morning on NPR with Jim Dwyer, you know, the great New York Times reporter and columnist. And he says this is the nature of the rhetoric that goes on every time there's a police contract. Mm-hmm. There's always this kind of verbiage, except this time this event happened and he seized
and
on the union president seized on it.
It's a tactic, that's what
makes this different. But it's fairly routine to have this kind of back and forth. It wasn't like the cops got along with Giuliani or they got along with Bloomberg or they got along with Mayor Beam or anybody in the past. You know, it's part of it, except now we're all seeing it through a different prism. And I think it has the appearance of being something more. And that's not to excuse it. I think it's reprehensible, and I think he does a disservice to his officers. But
he did.
Take it in context. You know, take it in context. Just
he's got a job.
Some blabbermouth. Well, you know, I would disagree that he's doing his job the way it should be done.
I know, but
it's
he
an
thinks
opportunity
he has a job
to rise to,
do.
To the occasion, and he has completely abandoned that. But Having said that, it is in the context of contract talks. You're right.
But isn't that? But timing is everything, right? I mean, if you do it a week from now, if you do it in the new year as opposed to the day after,
right? It has no effect. Right. The expectation for Lynch was to respond in some way a little bit over the top. That's what his constituency was looking for, and I think he just fell right in.
That's not even necessarily the case. More and more New York City police officers, these two police officers, one was Asian and the other was Hispanic. Mm-hmm. I mean, the New York City Police Department is a broadly diverse department. It makes you wonder if this sort of old thug tactics that, that the union president was using are even relevant.
That's a great point.
The rank and file is more diverse. I'm not so sure on the leadership.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I agree. Yes. I think the rank and file is probably more like, and others have observed this, more like the protesters.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the interesting things also coming out the last day or so, only one of the protest groups, various groups from around the city, have said that they're not going to comply. One group has said that they're going to go ahead with their demonstration. I believe it's tomorrow, whether, the mayor likes it or not. But I think they're the only ones. And I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of the organization, but they said they're going to go ahead full steam.
Let's take a break. We'll come back. We'll get a couple of letters in. We welcome yours, roundtable at WAMC.org, and then we'll touch on another issue before we have a news break at the bottom of the hour. Roundtable at WAMC.org, or you can also go to WAMC.org/roundtable. The post is entitled 12/23/14 panel. Just click on that and go from there. Again, WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be right back.
Support comes from NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com. Lucky Chocolates, Socrates, New York, offering a cafe with a seasonally changing menu, including local produce and organic ingredients. LuckyChocolates.com. Saratoga Bridges, Boston Spa, New York, a community resource for people with disabilities and their families, supported employment, day services, and more. SaratogaBridges.org. And Sunflower Natural Foods Market, Woodstock and Rhinebeck, with local, handcrafted, healthy, and sustainable gifts, home goods, and gourmet foods. Customized holiday gift baskets, too, on Facebook and sunflowernatural.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. Have a couple letters regarding what we've been talking about and the police shooting in New York City. James writes, said it yesterday, but how did this guy get a gun? 16 criminal instances, mental problems. Where is the general regulation and background check like getting a car? Tom said, you can be sad and able to commiserate the killing of two police officers by a crazy man from Baltimore and still be concerned by police overreach. The two concerns are not mutually exclusive. And I don't think they have to be, but I don't know that you have to necessarily put blood on the hands of people who are in the process of mourning and grieving at the same time. Maybe there's a timing for that. Maybe that's me being overly naive. Okay. And then, speaking of, Joan says, the blood of all victims, regardless of color, gender, creed, etc., is on the hands of this union. Giuliani and all people and organizations who make these horrendous comments blaming the mayor so they can use him as a scapegoat for their own injustice, bias, corruption, etc. These murders were tragic and unnecessary and committed by an obviously mentally deranged man. There's no excuse for any of these murders, including those murders of community members by police who repeatedly get away with it. We need policing. We're too overpopulated, and at least 50% or more of us are on the borderline of a mental breakdown. We got this letter also, which says there are recordings of demonstrators chanting to kill cops. I submit to you that no rational human commits murder of anyone, let alone police officers. Therefore, when the mayor, the president, and the age, spout rhetoric, and allow for demonstrators free rein, it is not surprising when irrational individuals commit these types of crimes.
Well, there's a photo in the New York, in the Daily News today, of a woman of color, holding up a sign, handmade. On December 13th, 2014, I marched against police brutality. Today, I stand against brutality against police. I mean, I think that there are folks who are not standing with what happened. And these are the people who did demonstrate against police brutality. You know, people can make the distinction between the two things and recognize we need a peaceful society, not one where violence reigns.
What I have not heard is when we saw, even in the Garner incident, we saw protests across the country. Of course, in Ferguson, we saw protests across the country. And maybe because of the calm that was called for, but we don't see it immediately being discussed in other major cities across the country, even though, as someone mentioned earlier, and rightfully so, that it has become an international story.
Well, New York is such a unique city. It's gigantic. And to have when someone plans a protest march, you know, they sort of have this, like, automatic response. Okay, let's see. We got to close the streets. Got to do this. Got to divert traffic. Get the permit. You got to do this. I mean, it's a city where everybody can express themselves with wide freedom. So it is the stage, I guess, of the world. And in this case, it is the topic, you know, the tension between the racial tension that exists in our society and the tension between police and minorities is, you know, it's the front burner topic mm-hmm. today. And mm-hmm. it's happening in the most public city in the world.
Lynn writes, I can't let go of the comments today that Lynch is just doing his job by linking people demonstrating their First Amendment rights with a murderer. That is unacceptable on the part of any public official. And Tim says it might be of interest to compare the killing of two police officers by a Bundy supporter earlier this year. This was after many armed white people were facing off with the U.S. government. There was little discussion afterwards, and it is largely forgotten. We welcome your letters as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. Mike Spain, Mary Alice Mulgard, and Libby Post make up our panel this morning. We have many other topics to discuss, which we'll do so right after a news break. We welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org or online, WAMC.org/roundtable. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. Let me introduce the group to you. Mike Spain is here, Mary Alice Mulgard, and Libby Post. They make up the panel, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We've got a lot of stories to talk about, so we'll get to all of these, and, at least we'll try. So let me read from the New York Times article on this, because I think I can do it with enough dripping sarcasm to make it funny. A strange thing happened to North Korea's already tenuous link to the internet on Monday. It failed. While perhaps a coincidence, the failure of the country's computer connections began only hours after President Obama declared Friday that the United States would launch a proportional response to what he termed as an act of cyber vandalism against Sony Pictures. Well, over the weekend, as North Korean officials demanded a joint investigation into the Sony attacks and denied culpability, an assertion that the United States rejected, internet service, for some reason, began to get, started to get wobbly. And by early Monday, the internet went as dark and was out. And experts who monitor the health of the global internet called it one of the worst North Korean network failures in years. But American officials who had described over the weekend how they were intensely focused on the country's telecommunications connections through China and how they had asked the Chinese government for help in cutting off the North's ability to send malicious code around the world declined to discuss what befell those connections. So we can only speculate, right?
Somebody pulled the plug.
Yeah, they
that's
walked
all
in.
That
and
happens.
There's six people
the plug
on the internet,
it.
You know?
Right. I tripped over
right.
it.
Right. The virtual Weebles wobbled and they did fall down.
Well, it's completely possible that the Chinese decided to do it.
Yep.
We have been urging them to do it, but they might have done it. They sometimes try to rein in North Korea. They seem like, you know, the older brother who just kind of slaps them around when they don't behave and kind of brings them back into line. Who knows? But, you know, one interesting question about this is, this was an attack. The United States government now says it was an attack by the North Korean government or somebody they commissioned to do it. They have a team that does this, apparently. And it was done on an international company, a company with enormous presence in the U.S. and in Japan and all around the world, Sony Corporation. But it wasn't a direct attack on the United States. Should the United States be retaliating if it was, in fact, the United States taking a proportionate response for something that is, you know— when a foreign government goes after a international corporation, is that an appropriate response?
And I wonder that exact same thing. And is the difference the fact that there was a terrorist threat made in connection with the attack?
You know, that's the rationale. They were threatening to do a 9/11 style attack on any movie theaters that would run the movie, and if the movie were to run in movie theaters. So, you know, that does justify the government stepping in, no question. But it just seems like it's gotten very complicated. And, you know, I think it was a proportionate response, maybe disproportionate. But,
you know, we always talk about the power of corporations and the evil corporations and all that they do. You know, you could probably think that Sony could knock this one out, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, yeah.
Well, there's also a really limited presence. You know, very, very yes. few people in North Korea have access to the internet. So, you know, we're joking about knocking out the plug, but we're really talking about a very, very small group of people who have access and very few businesses or corporations. You know, if you look at that image of the world where you know, you see mm-hmm. the usage of electronics and just the presence of electricity, you know, North Korea is just this black spot. And so, you know, we're only talking about a handful of folks who are affected in the first place. I think this is relatively easy to do. And I think probably a hacker in his basement somewhere in California could probably have done this.
Well, you know, what's interesting is, you know, you see the connections, at least in my adult brain, I see these connections between the government with a proportional response if they were behind this, because they are sending a message, look, we can knock you out very easily, so yeah. don't try to do anything to government,
right.
to the U.S.
Yeah.
government's
This is just
internet.
A little warning.
This is just, you know, want to let you know that. And yet the corporate issues here, when you look at what's going on in Russia with Facebook,
yes,
you
yes.
know, and their capitulation to the government in Russia to pull down a page that was about a demonstration against Putin and for somebody who's a, mm-hmm. you know, I can't remember.
A dissident.
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting to see how now the internet is going to become, or has become and will be even more, a political battleground.
Oh, I think that's incredibly insightful. And what you said about the demonstration of how easily the United States government perhaps could take down a country's internet mm-hmm. could also be a warning shot for other countries.
That's right.
So and then you put that up against, you know, the way that the Soviet government apparently has been able to influence Facebook to modify the way that it behaves. You know, it's a very interesting turn of events. It's
so
the
on
new
one,
battlefield.
On one hand, you know, we in America want freedom of expression, and we want to be able to see that movie, whether it's stupid or not, right? You know, and then...
Yes, I guess so.
Yes, yeah. yes. You admit it, Mike. Just admit it. You want to see that movie, you know. And then on the other hand, you have this sense of where's the line between corporate takeover and freedom of speech? Mm-hmm. You know, because it's the opposite end of the conversation.
And Facebook is under no obligation to adhere to what the United States says or does, it's a corporation too. So it's
there
protecting
its... There is no First Amendment necessarily
at all.
Facebook.
Not
they
at
can
all.
Deny you your First
right.
Amendment rights.
Right.
Sony may deny you your First Amendment rights by filtering what it allows in its theaters and
That's
what
right.
it releases.
So Facebook may have just made the judgment that this is in their best interests to go along with Putin.
Yeah, and I should say it is not. They're not bound by law. To do that. I mean,
there is no law
world,
for them.
You know,
right.
there's a world out there, and they, you know, Google has succumbed to pressure from China to mm-hmm. block certain mm-hmm. right. feeds coming in. If they want to do business there, they got to play by
That's
the
right.
rules.
That's right. It's all about business. It's
according
all about profit.
According to the Supreme Court, they're just citizens.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if they are citizens, that means they do have freedom of speech issues.
So what we've been talking about, in case you don't know, is a decision by Facebook to block a page used to rally Russian opponents of Vladimir Putin has engulfed the world's largest social networking site in political controversy and raised accusations that it censors content on behalf of the authorities here. That's in Moscow. Facebook over the weekend removed an event page promoting a January 15th demonstration near the walls of the Kremlin in support of a leading opposition figure. The page had gathered more than 12,000 prospective attendees before it was blocked at the request of the Russian government's internet monitor. The opposition figure here, who ran unsuccessfully for mayor of Moscow in 2013, Mr. Navalny, has been under house arrest since February. He faces up to 10 years in prison if convicted in a pending criminal case, one of several prosecutions brought against him. And I suppose you could read a lot into this, and probably we should, but is there a point where you just say, okay, if you're Facebook, we don't want to get involved in this?
Well, but there's another page up. Right. I'm looking at it right now. My Russian's a little rusty, so you'll have to forgive me. But I can see that there are 29,000 people on this page saying that they're going to go to this, which is more than 100% of the people that were taken down in the first page. So it's like Russia wants Facebook to play whack-a-mole, you know?
Yeah,
perhaps. That's a great metaphor. Yeah.
So what do you think they end up doing?
Well, they're going to cave in one by one, but let something else happen,
right.
and cave
mm-hmm.
in there if they have to, you know. And it's
and
a
then
game.
Another one will go up.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a game, and they probably are trying to avoid an overall shutdown, lockout of Facebook from Russia.
Right. I mean, we saw Twitter played this instrumental role in the Arab Spring. You know, that's how people were able to organize. And social media, this is the good part of social media, is in terms of how it can bring people together around a political issue, fighting for their rights. And, you know, they'll probably play whack-a-mole. The criminal will get upset. They'll take one page down. Another one will come up. And the event's going to continue to happen. It's going to be on January 15th.
We are going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from MPAC, preparing ongoing arts residencies for performances in the spring 2015 season. MPAC.rpi.edu. The Black Sheep Downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe, offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com. Hudson Wine Merchants, Hudson, New York, celebrating 10 years of wine and food in the Hudson Valley. Raise your glass, hudsonwinemerchants.com. And Hudson Valley Fresh, a not-for-profit co-op of 9 Hudson Valley dairy farmers providing fresh, local dairy products to the region, offering eggnog for the holidays. HudsonValleyFresh.com.
Songs of good cheer, Christmas.
Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable discussion for this Tuesday, the 23rd of December. Our panel is here. They are ready to tackle some more issues, so we will do that. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Here's what I learned yesterday in reading the news. the Pope is pissed.
Joe, are you allowed to say that on the radio?
I had to change a commentary once because I said that.
Well, I apologize if I'm not, but I got to tell you. There's a great article in the Washington Post that says saying that it's not a perfect analogy, but that the Pope's Christmas greeting Monday to the senior governing cardinals, bishops, and priests of the Vatican was a little bit like a CEO sending his or her top executives off to Christmas vacation with a cleverly worded list of everything they do wrong at the company. Merry Christmas.
Will there be a Christmas bonus at the Vatican?
So you know you're in trouble when the list, there's a 15-point catalog of spiritual diseases that he has added, which include spiritual Alzheimer's, spiritual petrification, a feeling of being immortal, and a concept that Francis referred to, Francis urging followers to prepare for Christmas with joy instead of dourness or anxiety,
and gossip.
Yes, he says sometimes the officials feel themselves lords of the manor, superior to everyone and everything. He hoped that the Christmas season would help the governing body to heal some of what ails it. Now, you, Mr. Spain, talked moments ago of the older brother kind of smacking around the younger brother to get him in line.
That was China against North Korea, but this is this is the leader of the entire Catholic Church, and he's not. It's not a democracy. I mean, he's really in control. Now, an important thing to realize about this study that yielded this, all of these critical summaries of what's going wrong with the Roman Curia was commissioned by the predecessor Pope. And he saw problems, and previous popes had been too busy. You know, they say Pope John Paul II, Saint John Paul II, was traveling around the world. That's what one commentator said. And then he was ill later in his papacy, and he wasn't able to focus on this. And Benedict, who succeeded him, he did see it, so he commissioned this study. And he and the current Pope, Pope Francis, both know everything that's in there, and they warn that after a while, the leadership, the Roman Curia, the leadership of the Church, starts to behave as an institution by itself and try to run things and protect their status and add to their own well-being while ignoring the needs of the people of the Church. And that's what really ticked off the Pope.
What I find fascinating, though, is that so many of the people who are now fascinated by this Pope and are interested and like this guy, like him because he seems to be at least trying to change things, move things into a new direction, while complete and utter change can't come overnight. He's at least moving in that direction. He seems to be a right jolly old elf most of the time. Mm-hmm. And here, wow. So this idea of linking it to disease, of calling it spiritual Alzheimer's.
Yeah, brilliant.
And strong terms.
Existential schizophrenia. That's brilliant, in my mind, anyway.
Well, it shows that he's pulled the gloves off, and he's trying to make broad institutional change in the Church. He's brought in all kinds of advisors from all over the globe that are not in the. He wasn't part of the Roman hierarchy.
Right, and that's his advantage. He's not a product of the Curia. And I think he has the ability to do what you're saying, draw in from other parts of the world. You know, the Curia is made up primarily of Italians and Europeans, right. and he is clearly going in opposite directions.
It's amazing he ever got elected, to be quite honest with you, somebody who's from the outside
more than the Curia votes on who's going to be the Pope.
Oh, so right.
the intentions of worldwide cardinals was to have a reformer in there. Maybe not a reformer as bold as he might be, but a reformer.
Yeah, and the Curia is just the management team. They're not the electors for the most part.
This idea, someone had mentioned that gossiping was the big thing. So if you want to get the attention of the curia, if you want to get attention to the governing body, say, well, what you're doing is very Satan-like. And
That's a diss when you're talking to the cardinals who are running the Vatican.
And he uses the term, you are cold-blooded murderers of reputation.
Well, that's the gossip thing. It said that he spoke of going after each other's reputation to protect their own and character assassination, things like that. And he didn't pull any punches. And the photos show a very serious, stern Francis. And he's known for the broad smile that you always see when he's like holding up babies in the Vatican Square and giving them a kiss and stuff. And the cardinals are stern also. And there was, according to the Associated Press, there was moderate applause afterwards.
Yes.
Well, and you said something when we were off air in jest, Mike, and I think, you know, that maybe the Pope should hire a food taster. But there is precedent, you know, when a Pope has gone up against the Curia in past history, the Pope has lost.
How long he can keep this on. And, you know, the risk is, you know, tearing the church apart and having a schism and having conservatives, you know, elect their own pope and then others in disarray. On the other hand, he seems to be full of vigor, and he seems to be in good health, and he seems determined.
And the populace loves him.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Don't you think having the faithful of the church behind you is a pretty safe thing?
Although more and more right-wing groups, right-wing organizations within the Catholic Church are criticizing him. A lot of right-wing Catholics are criticizing him for helping to broker the deal that's going to end the UN embargo on Cuba, et cetera. So there is a division, and they're becoming more vocal in the last year as he's rolled out his reform agenda. And he's got to be careful not to split the church.
CNN.
Well, this is a new Dan Brown novel in the making.
Let's hope not.
Well, that's what it seems like.
So as CNN notes, the Pope may have made an oblique reference to the sex abuse scandal while discussing a disease of closeness, which he said was, quote, a cancer which threatens the harmony of the body and causes a lot of evil and scandal, especially towards our small brothers and sisters. I don't know how oblique
that is. He speaks in obtuse terms, but I think it's pretty clear.
Yes, that's what I was going to...
Didn't have any trouble figuring out that connection.
All right, let's go on to other topics and find out what else is making... Well, of course, Joe Cocker passed away. Great Joe Cocker passed away at 70 years old, and it was sad. A veteran of Woodstock and of
Woodstock performance.
It certainly was.
And it was, to me, I don't know. I was a fan, and he had great success with covers.
Interpretation. He interpreted others. You know, remember the letter? You remember he did?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, the song that was the theme for the TV series, The Wonder Years, was the one that he sang at Woodstock and the Beatles song. And I had heard today that Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr paid him tribute today for the way that he, you know, interpreted their songs.
Their song, yeah.
Well, this morning, as one of the links to the story, there was Billy Joel did a rendition of Joe Cocker doing that song, and it was really quite moving. It was great.
And let's not forget John Belushi's frequent rendition of Joe Cocker, including one right next to him when he was performing on Saturday Night.
Joe Cocker. Which is really great, all of that. But it was sad. I did not. I guess it was not ultimately. I think September was announced that he had cancer.
Billy Joel made that announcement.
Reference to it in his garden concert.
And and urged that he get a spot on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And that's one of those things like, really? Joe Cocker isn't on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Yeah, you wonder.
Makes you wonder who
is. How
does
that work? Right. So that was sad news from yesterday. And what do we want to end with? Let's let's see. We do. Let me get to some letters here, because we do have a few of them. Tom says this Pope needs to be given a Pulitzer Prize for anything chutzpah, if nothing else. Eric says, playing the bruised giant, do we think Sony will end up spinning this into great profit for a bomb of a movie?
Oh, probably. Yes.
No, I think that they cannot possibly make back the money that they have lost and the reputation they have lost by this, and probably all the pain they've caused so many people who work for them.
JK writes, is anyone discussing maybe China could be using North Korea to attack Sony USA over territory disputes between Japan and China?
Okay. Plausible.
Okay. And on that note, we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we'll end this morning with we just have about 30 seconds, but if you want to keep the conversation going, you certainly can, and the panel will be going on. And if you go to wamc.org/roundtable and you'll see 12/23/14 is the panel, and you click on that, then that means that all of our panelists, Mike and Mary Alice and Rosemary, can read and they can comment.
Excuse me?
And they can. And Libby, excuse me, I apologize.
No, it was a compliment.
No. No, when I don't get your name right, it's not a compliment.
Yeah, well,
it's my screw up.
Just so everyone out there knows, I love Rosemary, so
as
fine with me.
As do I, but I should have correctly identified you.
It's okay.
But thank you for keeping me on top of my game.
You're so welcome.
I appreciate it.
That's my job.
Now, hopefully you'll stay with me for the next 2 hours of the show.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, sorry about that, Joe.
Yeah, sorry, gotta go.
All right. Thank you very much. For those of you who I don't see tomorrow, have a wonderful, beautiful holiday. And thank you very much. And Libby, we will see you tomorrow.
Yes.
So thank you very much. All right. More Roundtable after this.